Even a tiny beetle can be brave. Even the smallest hatchling can find its courage in a moment of challenge. How brave would the travellers need to be? What might they face on the mountain? As for being strong, there was more than one kind of strength. Yes, there was the strength that allowed an ox to pull a heavy cart, or a man to chop wood, or a woman to give birth to a child. There was also the strength that allowed a community to stand up for what was right, or a court official to question orders that seemed unjust, or men and women to leave their homes and all that was familiar in order to serve a higher cause. For the animals, the quest was not quite as grand as that, but it was done in the same spirit. Hawk was searching for a lost friend. Bear and Fox had joined him out of comradeship and loyalty. Goat had been drawn into it somewhat against his better judgment, but as the strange adventure unfolded, he'd found a certain satisfaction in being part of a team, in knowing he was useful. As for the storyteller and her little dog, nobody was quite sure why they had joined the group, but they had their uses, if only to keep the others entertained. Stasia went on a while, presenting the group of travellers with challenges they met with courage, strength, or quick thinking. She had not planned the story when she started, but she knew she needed to keep it brief. They needed to move on as soon as Mattis was ready. Maybe that dark presence had collapsed into bones, and maybe it was still out there in some form. They were too exposed here. "With that disaster averted," she said, "the adventurers stopped for a while to rest. And it is when one stops to rest that the doubts and fears often flood back in. So it was with Hawk, leader of the expedition." Sometimes a story takes its course almost despite the teller. This was one of those times. One of them was gone, perhaps forever. One had been so sick that for a while he could barely walk. One had been terribly injured and was still in pain. All had almost fallen to oblivion. As for the little dog, she had been key to their survival. But now she was gone. Where, nobody knew. Hawk felt the weight of those losses, those sorrows. He carried them deep in his spirit. He waited for his companions to ask, "Is your quest truly worth it? Is the cost simply too high? What if it proves to be in vain?" But they did not speak. Nobody looked at her. Nobody moved. It was Carolus who broke the silence. "You can't end it there." "It's not for me to answer those questions," Stasia said. Alex wasn't looking at her. His unease was written all over him. Perhaps he blamed her for what had just happened. Perhaps he thought she'd led them astray. But she had followed the signs, and the signs had been a clear invitation to take a certain path. Perhaps everything that had happened was part of a test. "Are you worthy?" Alexa spoke at last. "I don't know what you want from me." A silence, in which the sound of Mattis's breathing, quieter now but still laboured, was a reminder of the horror they had escaped. Stasia stayed silent. Alex was the leader. He must work this out for himself. It was Lucas who eventually spoke. "We have no choice but to go on. Turning back now would be foolish, and what happened before, it feels as if the mountain is helping us to move on." "The mountain is listening to Stasia," said Carolus. "If you're worried about right path," Mattis put in, "Stasia might do what she does with the fire." Alex moved, sitting up straighter, turning to face his companions. "Hawk was not prepared to accept defeat," he said. And a nameless feeling rushed through Stasia, warming every part of her. Not even when he'd come close to losing all of his comrades, not even when exhaustion had driven them to the brink of despair. The place they sought was in sight now, mist-shrouded and strange, but entirely real. He would not turn back. His companions were worn down, sad, hurt, but they were also a team. They had helped one another. They had shown courage, kindness, strength, even in such adversity as this. What should he do? How should he speak to them? The silence that followed was one of sharp attention. Mattis sipped the draught Carolus had given him, his eyes fixed on Alex. Stasia had no idea what was coming next. He had already astonished her. He wondered if now was the time for a rallying cry, a stirring call to duty, an invitation to the building of a better future. For although he would rejoice if his lost friend was found, he knew that would be the start of a far greater quest. But Hawk was no legendary hero. He was as flawed and broken and mixed up as anyone else. It came to him that something different was needed now. So he said to them, "I'm sorry. You are my friends. You've shown strength beyond what I could ever have expected. I'm sorry I have let you be hurt, scared, unsettled. I'm sorry I have led you close to death. From my heart, I'm sorry, and I thank you for your loyalty." There were tears in Stasia's eyes now. She was not the only one. Mattis set down his cup to dab at his cheek, and both Carolus and Lucas gave nods of understanding. "And now, we move on," Alex said. "We move on to the end together. I hope you can forgive me for my errors." "First, forgive yourself." The words were out before Stasia could stop them. "Then you can move on." She felt her face flush. Alex was the ruler's senior advisor, and she was, whatever she was, a farm worker, a labourer, a woman who sometimes let her words come out when she should have held them back. She was about to mumble an apology when Alex rose to his feet. "Not easy," he said, looking at the ground. "Not easy for any of us," said Carolus quietly. "We all have regrets. We all have things we wish we'd done better. We've all made decisions that later proved to be less than perfect. Yes, it's hard to acknowledge your errors and set them behind you, but that's the only way forward. Lay aside the burdens of the past. Learn from your mistakes. Recognize your own strengths and move on." There was something stirring in this speech, softly though it was delivered. And Alex had listened. She saw that on his face. "When you're ready, Mattis," he said now, "we'll set out and find that safe camping spot. I will take time to think on what you said, Stasia. And if you're willing, perhaps you will look in the flames for us tonight and ask for insights." There was a brightness in his eyes now, the fledgling spark of something new and good. But there were long, weary miles ahead. "We'll talk again later," Alex added. "Thank you for your honesty, for saying what had to be said." She nodded, not daring to speak again, lest the tears become unstoppable. Scrying was best done alone. An audience was a distraction, even when those watching stayed silent and kept their distance. But there was only one fire in this new camp, the fire that was keeping them all warm, the one on which they'd heated a makeshift soup, made more palatable by the inclusion of small fish caught in a nearby pond. Lucas had strained this through a piece of cloth, so the meal provided flavour without tiny sharp bones. The food did little to satisfy Stasia's hunger, and she imagined it was the same for all of them, but nobody complained. It was what it was. Perhaps the onward journey would provide better opportunities. And now here she was, with the rest of them around her at a discreet distance waiting. The fire had died down, but smoke still rose in lazy swirls, and the embers glowed in the half-dark of late evening. "Stasia?" Lucas moved on soft feet, coming up beside her. "You'll be needing this." The amber owl dangled from its chain, catching the fire's light as he passed it to her. Stasia took it, smiling, and cupped it in her hand. Its small presence was steadying. Lucas retreated to sit with the others, and she began the ritual. She'd done this often enough. The steps came without conscious thought, despite the awkwardness of being watched. Because she had an audience, she made the ritual simpler. First, slow breathing. Then, grandmother's verse, spoken in a murmur. The mind clear, the body upright but relaxed, eyes on the fire, and between one breath and the next, the tiny owl came from nowhere to alight on her shoulder. Stasia heard the gasps of surprise, the soft sounds of recognition from the men as Flip settled in her rightful spot. She was back. She was safe. Now Stasia's tears fell, not in the outburst of emotion she had choked back after Alex at last spoke from the heart, but in a steady, silent stream. She did not wipe them away. They were tears of relief, delight, joy. Without a doubt, they were part of the ritual. There were so many questions that could be asked, too many, and sometimes it was safer and better not to know the answers. Stasia took her time, keeping her mind open, hearing only the whisper of leaves, the steady breathing of her companions, the distant calls of birds. What rose to the surface was this: at the end of this journey, will we find answers? She spoke the words in a murmur, then waited. What came in the smoke was a familiar scene. The old woman smiling, beckoning, as if to say, "Come, daughter, seek your answers here." Another was there too, a tall figure in a hooded cloak, the same she had seen in a much earlier vision. This could be man or woman or something else entirely. Again, the two stood in front of a rock wall. This time shadows danced on the expanse of stone, forms moving with grace. Then, all too soon, the vision dissipated, leaving only trailing wisps of smoke. She sat utterly still, wanting more, needing more, but there was no more. Eventually, she drew a deep breath, let it out slowly, and looked over toward the men. "I didn't see much," she said. "Only what I'd seen before. An old woman, most likely at the Hermit. Someone else with her, a cloaked figure. And the sense that she would welcome me and perhaps share knowledge with me if I went to her." A silence. Then Carolus asked the question Alex would not. "Anything about Marcus?" "Nothing. And I'm not sure asking that question would have helped. There's so much we don't know. What I saw did seem hopeful. I'm sorry, I can't tell you more. Visions don't show you exactly what will happen in the future. They can't. Our choices shape the way things turn out." "The cloaked figure, could that have been him?" Mattis asked. "Marcus?" "It could have been him. Or anyone else the height of a grown man. I saw no clues, except that it was someone who chose not to show me their face, someone hidden. You could interpret that in different ways." "It does sound hopeful," Carolus said. "I would take it that this old woman exists, that she is well disposed toward you, and that she is not alone at the Hermit. That much is surely sufficient to keep us moving on, once we're all ready to do so. And as for the hooded figure, it's not hard to guess why Marcus might wish to keep his presence there secret, at least until the right time came to reveal himself. If others are living in those wild parts of the Northlands, perhaps they have their own reasons for secrecy. The old woman has shown herself to me several times now. Every time, it looked as if she wanted me to go forward, toward her. It felt odd to be talking openly about this. Grandmother had taught her that the substance of visions was deeply secret, to be shared only by the seer and whoever sought answers, though in a sense, their team of five was made up of seer and truth seekers, and if that was so, Now was the time to tell all she had seen. Not to do so would feel like a betrayal. In earlier visions of that old woman, I've seen bad things from the past, from when the commander came to Hartwood. Gods, it was in front of her eyes now, in all its horror. But she must get the truth out now she'd started, all of it. In one of those, I saw the Ridgeway, the mist, the ghosts, someone falling. But when it really happened, just now, I didn't recognize it until it was too late. And in that earlier vision, there was a fight. A terrible, violent, hand-to-hand fight. Maybe because of some choice we've made along the way that never happened. She glanced around the circle. Carol is calm and capable. Mattis, his arm in a sling, his shoulder bandaged, the look on his face showing the draft had not entirely eased the pain. Lucas sitting cross-legged by the fire, frowning as if his thoughts hurt him. And Alex, watching her like the hawk he was, waiting, because he suspected she was holding something back. He would just have to wait. She was not going to say, "You were there, with fury in your eyes." "Maybe I should have warned you when those images were first shown to me," she said instead. "I was still learning to trust, and I've been taught to keep what I see to myself. Visions are not easy to interpret. A warning might itself end up causing disaster." A silence. Then Mattis said, "Nobody's judging you, Stasia. Your wisdom is essential to the team. I understand what a burden that must place on you, and I thank you for using your gift to help us." He shifted awkwardly in place, trying to get comfortable. It seemed cruel to expect him to go on with the journey. "You speak for all of us, Mattis," said Carolus. Stasia stared into the dying fire. She'd told them. That was good. But something felt wrong still. Alex was too quiet. And the task of reaching the hermit loomed larger than before, even though the place itself was now in sight. Matters would be slow, and Lucas still wasn't his old strong self. Tonight there was a pinched look about his features. Perhaps, in helping haul Mattis back from near death, he had done himself new damage. As a storyteller, it was part of her job to bring hope, but hope was hard to reach right now. She imagined her old life in Hartwood, wondering if she would go back to it if there was such a choice. A quiet, orderly life. In that life, she'd been looked on as odd. Strong and reliable, yes, but never part of the community. Now the future held danger, challenge, uncomfortable change. But she was among friends. Here she was equal. Alex spoke at last. "What are you thinking, Stasia?" "Asking myself if I would go back to my old life, if I still could." "And what was the answer?" "I don't think I'd fit into that life anymore. None of us can go back to exactly what we were." Into the silence that followed this, she said, "I hope we'll be the better for the way this tests us. But there are times when that's hard to believe." A silence, broken eventually by Carolus. "If we achieve our mission, the whole of the Northlands may change for the better. It's worth reminding ourselves of that when we feel low." "Well said, my friend," Mattis added his voice. "A change of ruler can't undo the damage already done," said Lucas. "The folk who suffered, the folk who died in Hartwood." He glanced at Stasia. "The work of destruction." Stasia waited for Alexis to respond to this, but he did not. Eventually, she said, "If the new ruler was a peace-loving man, if he could be relied upon to make good choices, and if folk followed him because they believed in him, not because they were afraid of him, then such horrors would not happen under his rule. He couldn't undo the ills of the past. Nobody can bring the dead back to life. The ancestor, Irina, poor Thomas, and so many others. Marcus is the son of Lord Casimir, and it sounds as if Lord Casimir was that kind of leader. Alex looked up, met her gaze. His smile was like the first cautious touch of sunshine on a frozen landscape. It warmed her heart. Thank you, Stasia. You did not know Marcus or his father, but Lord Casimir was indeed a wise and peaceable leader. And although Marcus was only a boy when I knew him, he showed every sign of growing into the same kind of man. Or would have done, if he'd grown up in his father's household. That was Lucas. Stasia held back words she knew she would regret. She reminded herself that Lucas was probably in pain, that he was missing his family desperately. True, she said, and he may still have done, growing up elsewhere. Perhaps learning more than he ever could have learned if he had not set out on that adventure long ago. We're learning on our own journey, aren't we? Everything from how to make a great cup of tea to how a strangely assorted group of animals can end up helping one another, supporting one another, sharing understanding. They can become friends and maybe achieve what none of them alone could ever have done. 42. Alexis. Stasia's words had given him new hope. Despite the injuries that slowed them, they were making progress. The hermit was not always in view, for they were working their way through dense tracts of forest now. But whenever they caught a glimpse of the towering rock formation in its cloak of mist, it seemed a little nearer. And Stasia was still finding signs. He had started seeing them too. Patterns on bark, almost like writing, but in a script, indecipherable by humankind, its swirling shapes almost dance-like. Small stones in piles, sometimes balanced in ways that looked impossible. He noticed how Stasia picked up feathers, touching them almost as if they were sacred, and whispering words he could not hear. She tucked them into her pack. They were some sort of gift, an understanding between her and the forest. There was no pushing the pace. They were all worn out. Mattis could not carry a pack and needed help to climb. Lucas was clearly still in pain, though refusing to admit anything was wrong. They'd given up keeping watch at night. Rest was imperative and likely safe enough now. There'd been no more uncanny occurrences since they got across the Ridgeway. And surely even the most dedicated of the ruler's followers were not, could not, pursue them so far. And then, as they prepared for sleep in fading light, they heard it. An outburst of shouting, a scream. Those sounds were not made by wolves or bears or night birds. They were the voices of men. For a few moments, all of them froze, silent. Then Mattis cursed under his breath. Stasia and Carolus jumped to their feet and began to throw on various items of clothing. Flip started a high-pitched barking. Stasia quickly hushed her. Alexis's heart was pounding like a war drum. He felt chill all through. After all this time, after everything. Pack up quietly, he murmured, struggling to sound calm. Keep the balance. The shouting had ceased. The only sounds now were the sleepy calls of birds in the forest around them. But that cry had been unmistakable, and surely not so very far away. Stasia, what's your estimate of where they are? She was busy rolling up her bedding and did not look at him. Sounded close, but everything's tricky up here. They might be at the Ridgeway, though they'd be crazy to try it at night. We need to move on right now, find a hiding place, and hope they pass us by. Make sure you have a weapon at hand, Carolus said, keeping to an undertone, and pack up everything. Leave no clues behind, quick as you can. They doused the remnant of the fire and did their best to erase other evidence of the camp. The moon was waning. With luck, the pursuers would miss the signs. Why were they out there at night? Who were they? Stasia, Alexis asked. What? Couldn't Flip fly back to find out who it is? No reply. I know what you said, but She's scared, Alex. It's getting dark, and we have to move on anyway. She might find us somewhere to hide, but I won't ask for more than that. A silence, then she added. There are wolves nearby. Wolves. That was all they needed. Will you lead us? He asked. He wished he could keep her safe instead. Carolus was giving her one of his big knives, helping her attach it to her belt. Alexis did not want Stasia fighting. He did not want her under attack. Without replying yes or no, she hitched up her pack and said, All set to go? Don't talk unless you must. If we can hear them, they can probably hear us. Sounding unafraid, sounding like a leader, she walked away down a near invisible forest track, with Flip in dog form by her side, and the others followed without a word. But Alexis saw the look Lucas gave him, even in the dim light of the waning moon. That look said, If she is hurt, I will lay the blame on you. If she is killed, I will make you pay. Alexis understood all too well. In Lucas's place, he would have felt the same. But he knew deep down that Stasia was her own woman and would make her own decisions. Then there was the undeniable fact that of the five of them, Carolus and Stasia were currently the fittest and strongest. He felt deep gratitude for the covert tutoring and close combat that both Mattis and Carolus had given him in the months leading up to their departure from court. He was a scholar, a negotiator. His early training in the wielding of weapons had been limited, and like that of Marcus, who, as a future ruler, had been provided with a far broader education. Oh, Marcus, please be there, and please remember me. We need you. All very well, but first they had to get there. Scant hours ago, the remaining distance to the hermit had looked achievable. Not so now. Stasia stayed in the lead, with Flip pattering along at her heels. Mattis came behind her, then himself, with Lucas next, and Carolus as rear guard. Not a whisper. The loudest sound he could hear was Mattis's breathing, which held a rasp of effort the big man could not suppress. Gods, what if this killed them all? His loyal friends who had set aside their own lives for the sake of his cause, and the two innocents from Hartwood Settlement, caught up in a disaster of his making. Stop it, Alex, he ordered himself. Be the leader you should be, and bear the consequences. 43. Stasia. If they kept on going, they'd soon be overtaken. Hiding somewhere and letting whoever it was pass seemed the best option. But what if they had a tracking dog, or more than one? How else could they possibly have worked out the way, when the paths she had followed were unlikely to have been trodden by humankind before? But how would a dog have managed to get across the ridgeway? She sent Flip a mind picture of a large hound stepping nimbly along the narrow path, and Flip responded with an image of the creature turning into an eagle and soaring up to fly to the nearest tall tree. An ordinary dog, Flip, not like you. There was no reply. She tried a different picture. Flip is a bird, finding a hidden cavern, shielded by thick undergrowth, and leading them in. All of them crouched deep in shadow, as pursuers headed on past, oblivious. The reply came swiftly. A pack of wolves, moving with purpose through a tract of forest that bore a close resemblance to the place they were in right now. Stasia motioned to the others to halt, cupped her ear to signal, listen. She did not expect to hear wolves, but if men were following their voices, their footfalls might betray them. All was quiet, save for the hoot of an owl, a sorrowful echo through the trees. She took a moment to judge the position of the moon, which was shielded by the canopy. Losing the way would be disastrous. A choice lay ahead, one she did not want to make. The sound of the ruler's men killing those rats would be forever with her. Yes, wolves were dangerous. Yes, they might launch an attack on an unwary party of travellers. She could, perhaps, ask the wolves to stay back, to let them pass, but there was always a risk in using her gift that way. And she would not say, let us pass, but do not let them pass. That was to assume the role of a god. How could she order a fellow creature to kill? She did not yet know who was following them. It might be someone with no ill intent. She couldn't do it, wouldn't do it. Alex came close. What is it? He whispered. Wolves. We must get undercover somewhere, hide away. It's either that, or stay alert until whoever it is catches up and fight. She couldn't say it. Sounds travel oddly here. Carolus had moved up to them and whispered as the others did. If they were on the ridgeway when we heard them, that puts them a couple of days behind us. Too far, you'd think, for us to catch the sound. But we know already that the usual rules of time and space may not apply here. Provided we're under good cover before first light, we could wait them out. Stasia? There was a note in Alexis's voice that made her heart shrink. Could the wolves help us? Would you use them in that way? If it were a life or death choice? The question hit her like a punch to the gut. How could he ask that? Didn't he realize what it meant? How much it would hurt? Couldn't he understand that it would lie like a shadow over her forever? It's all right. His tone had changed. I shouldn't have asked that. The words burst out. Unstoppable. It's not all right. It's never all right. There's always hurt. There's always a price to pay. Carolus's arm went around her, holding her still. His other hand came over her mouth. Alexis hissed, shh. Oh, God, she'd been almost shouting. So loud, too loud. Carolus released his hold. Stasia put her own hands up to cover her face. Sorry, she whispered. I'm so sorry. We move on. Alex spoke in a murmur. Stay alert. Be ready for whatever comes. Stasia felt the small weight of a bird settle on her shoulder. Flip had changed again. Why now, there was no knowing, but it was a good thing. They'd be quicker this way. She drew a deep breath, scrubbed her cheeks with a hand, straightened her back. I too will be strong. I too will hold the light. The trees seemed to whisper a response. The moon looked down through a break in the canopy, as if to remind her that the light still shone, even if she had made a foolish mistake. She nodded in Alex's direction, without really looking at him. What she saw was the face of Lucas, who stood behind him. For just a moment, a deep yearning to go back to old times flooded her heart, to have the old Lucas back, the one whose quiet company helped her cope with the confusion of dealing with the world, the one whose kindness was a gift beyond measure, the brave, true Lucas. She managed to smile, though no doubt it looked as wobbly as it felt, and Lucas smiled back at her. She gave him a nod. We'll cope. We always do. He returned it. Then she hitched up her pack and led the team onward. They walked on in the moonlight, pausing only when sheer exhaustion overtook one or other of them. They kept going until the sky lightened with the first hint of dawn, and it was plain they could go no further without rest. They had heard no more shouting, no human voices save their own, but Stasia felt in her bones that the pursuit was drawing closer. There were signs. A flock of small birds, what kind she could not tell, rising from the forest lower down as if startled, then winging overhead in rapid flight toward the hermit. A curious wind that shivered through the trees, stirring the leaves to a troubled whisper. And something more. The silent voices of small creatures, martens, mice, hedgehogs, animals she would not have expected to be here so high on the mountain. All of them were giving her one message. Beware. Danger. Hide. Or was that message only for their own kind? Perhaps she was the danger. Perhaps now that she had come so far with Alex's team, the forest no longer saw her as a friend. the endless ranks of pine and larch gave way to more open ground again. For some miles ahead, Stasia could see no caves or crannies, no thickets in which they might hide and rest. Mattis's breathing was painful to hear. Lucas was struggling despite his efforts to keep up, and her own head felt fuzzy. They had to stop. Alex?
Hmm?
He halted. So did the others. No need to say a thing. They made their way back under the pines, eventually finding a patch where they could set down their packs and stretch out on the needled ground. No undergrowth beyond a few scrubby bushes, no large stones to shield them, no rock faces with handy concealed caves, but it was clear they could not go on. Stasia's mind showed her the five of them lying down and falling immediately into exhausted sleep, then pursuers moving in and slaughtering every one of them with almost no resistance. A victory for the ruler, a triumph for cruelty and injustice. That couldn't be allowed to happen. It was all wrong. The hermit, Marcus, the ruler. Oh, gods, she couldn't keep her eyes open. A peck on the ear from Flip. Wake up! Then a sequence of images. The little bird flying away, swooping over another group of travellers. Their number and character were not clear. Then returning to this place, where Stasia and her companions were waiting, alert with weapons in their hands. Yes, Stasia said aloud. Go. And did her best to send Flip a triumphant mind picture in return. The bird in soaring flight, a rescuer, a champion. A moment later, Flip was gone. No explanations were necessary.
We set a watch, said Carolus. Short shifts. I'll go first. Keep your weapon to hand and be ready to act the moment you wake.
Drink before you rest. Stasia lowered herself to the ground. Every bit of her was aching. How much worse must it be for Mattis? She watched as Alex helped the big man find a comfortable position, as Carolus handed Lucas a water skin. If she let herself fall asleep, she might wake to find the others all dead. That terrible moment on the Ridgeway would be with her forever. Flip will bring back information if she can. As for why Flip had done this now, when she'd been so unwilling earlier, Stasia was too tired to think about it.
Wake me as soon as you need to, Carolus. Alexis looked grim. No longer than an hour.
I'll take third watch, Stasia said, wondering if there was any possibility they would have that long. As she lay down, her bones heavy with weariness, she sensed the wolves again. Not as close as the last time, but close enough. Moving cautiously, alert to trouble. One among them was a leader. He was watchful, as Carolus would be. Should she reach out to him now? At least let him know she was a friend and meant them no harm. That much was true, but she could not promise harm would not befall them at the hand of humankind. Not with two parties on the mountain, one hunting the other. She would wait until Flip came back, and she knew more. As for sleep, it was doing its best to blot out her troubles, to steal away her ability to think, but sleep felt perilous.
Stasia?
Alex's voice, a murmur. It must be closer than she'd thought.
Hmm?
Try to sleep. And thank you.
For what?
For all you've done. For being brave. For holding the light.
Oh, gods. How the tears were coming again. What was that but a final farewell?
Pull yourself together, Stasia. We'll win through, Alex, she whispered. We'll find him. We'll give the story the best ending we can.
Flip was back before the first watch ended, waking Stasia from deep sleep with an urgent peck. Stasia sat up, rubbing her eyes. Around her, the others, too, were waking. Stasia struggled to open her mind to Flip's. Her thoughts were still half caught in sleep. But the gnawing fear in her belly overcame the weariness, and she managed to focus. Show me, Flip. Only one image, and she knew the place. Gods help them. It was not long since they had walked through it. The men were clustered around her now, holding back their own words, waiting for the news. She made herself speak.
They're almost here. At least 6 men, armed, and there's a dog.
She swallowed, wondering if she might be sick.
Tell them. I think one of them is the commander, and one of them looked like Pavel.
Shocking as that glimpse had been, she could imagine how it might have happened. An unspeakable threat to his wife and baby son if he did not cooperate. An impossible choice. But when? Had his solitary expedition to the settlement seen him apprehended and hauled before the commander? That could hardly be right. Pursuit would have been almost immediate if he'd told the authorities the truth then. Perhaps the person Flip saw wasn't him. Perhaps it was some other young man with hair that shone golden in the dawn light, some other poor soul forced to act out the commander's will.
We can't stay ahead of them, Alex said. We'll have to stand and fight.
No choice, said Carolus, nodding. We have a little warning, at least. Mattis, what can you manage one-handed?
Throwing knives. Once they're gone, I'll need to resort to kicking.
Keep the sling on. Don't even think of trying to use that arm.
How about an axe?
One-handed? No, best give that to someone else.
Maybe this?
Lucas had found a sturdy fallen branch and was using his knife to strip it into a makeshift staff.
Keep it close by. Grab it when you need it.
Good, said Carolus.
Stasia?
You're the one they'll be after. Not to kill, to take back to Dragon's Keep. Be ready to fight, but let us protect you if we can.
As the sky brightened above the high limbs of pine and larch, he gestured, guiding the team into position.
Lucas to one side, Mattis to the other, himself in the center with Alexis, and Stasia just behind him. All too soon came the sound of stealthy footsteps. Stasia stood with feet planted firm and knife in hand, wondering if she could bring herself to use it against a man, even one so vile as the commander. Her heart was hammering, but she held her body strong. Flip had flown up into a tree and could no longer be seen. That was one blessing, at least. For now, padding with steady purpose and nose to the ground, came a large dog.
"Don't," she began,
knowing the creature was only doing the work it had been trained to do. There was a sharp whistle, and the dog dropped immediately to its belly, while out from the tree cover came the pursuers, their own weapons at the ready. Not charging in to kill, they too were waiting for an order.
"Master Alexis!"
The commander came to a halt, standing with legs apart. His voice dripped with disdain.
"And you, witch, why is that no surprise?"
The look in his eyes made Stasia's gorge rise. His belt was hung about with knives, and in his right hand he gripped a wooden bar, from which hung a chain with a studded metal ball at the end. That thing would crush a man's skull like an eggshell. And that fair-haired man behind him was Pavel. He looked as sick as she felt. The whole band of them, 7, 8, was armed to the teeth. How could they possibly, unless, oh gods, she didn't want to do it. She might have to do it.
"Well met, Rihard."
Alexis spoke like the seasoned negotiator he was, with perfect confidence and calm, as if he were not looking death in the face.
"Perhaps you were not aware that we came here on the ruler's orders, a mission to unlock the secrets of the mountain without destroying half of the place in the process. What exactly is your purpose in this out-of-the-way spot?"
"You're lying," the commander said.
"Ruler's orders, Bollocks! She's got folk out hunting for you all over the Northlands. Abandoned your post, took your unsavoury friends with you, not to speak of the girl there, and left court in the middle of the night without telling a soul. Fortunately, this young fellow, he gestured toward Pavale, saw the utter idiocy of your venture, told us the whole story after a bit of persuasion. Could have done with that information earlier, but he's making up for it now, aren't you, lad? Now what's it to be, Master Alexis? Do you admit your folly and hand over the girl, or does this end in blood? Give her to me. Take yourself and your cronies quietly off across the border, and you may yet avoid the penalty for treason. Alexis didn't say a word, but his rage was in every inch of his body. It was Lucas who responded, his voice harsh with fury. Lay so much as a finger on her, and you're dead. Rihard threw back his head and laughed. Oh, dear. The goat boy, the village troublemaker. Got a fondness for the witch, have we? But then, the girl's been travelling with you men. Sleeping rough, living wild. How did that work? Did you share her among you, a different one each night? She must have learned a thing or two by now. And on the way home, my team will indulge in the same pleasure, if you call it that. He glanced Stasia's way, an expression of disgust on his face. On second thoughts, maybe not. A fellow might find himself turned into a toad or a weevil. You always did talk too much, Rihard. Somehow, Alex was still managing to sound calm. A glance passed between him and Carolus, who gave the smallest of nods. The quiet woodland was suddenly filled with shouts of challenge and clashing weapons and bodies hurling themselves one way or another. No shield, no protective clothing. Rihard was coming Stasia's way, whirling his hideous weapon, but suddenly Mattis was there, reaching out left-handed with his makeshift staff, catching the chain with its spiked ball and hauling the whole thing bodily away from its wielder. Rihard roared with fury. One of his men crashed into Mattis's right side and sent the big man sprawling. The only thing in Stasia's mind was save him. She leaped forward, sliced upward. Her knife met resistance, then pulled the weapon out. The man clapped two hands to his belly. Blood welled between his fingers. Oh, gods, the sound he made. Stasia, focus. Another man was close, fighting Alex. Their arms locked both knives within inches of their marks. She kicked out, her boot striking the man's shin, making him stagger, and Alex's weapon delivered the death cut. Her head was whirling. Her heart was pounding. She could hardly breathe. Mattis, still on the ground, struggling to rise. And there was Pavale, reaching out a hand to help him up. Or was he about to strike? In the chaos, it was hard to see clearly. The thud of blows, the cries of agony, the curses and gasps for breath. Carolus was fighting like a legendary warrior, all speed and skill, and Alex was beside him now. She couldn't spot Lucas. Three of the enemy were on the ground, dead, dying. There was no knowing, but they kept on coming. There were surely more than seven. Alex, she shouted, get down! He ducked as a sword slashed through the air at neck height, then threw himself at his attacker, knocking the weapon from his hand. Stasia saw the look on his face, the same she had glimpsed in the flames, pure fury, sheer intent. He would die rather than surrender. They might all die. Mattis was struggling, limping as he wielded the staff. There was Lucas, backed up against a tree, fending off two attackers, new men, men who'd been waiting at a distance until they were needed, and Rihard now was simply watching the whole thing unfold with a smug smile of satisfaction on his face. He turned to look at her, and the smile turned to an expression that froze her heart. He pointed toward Alex, whose tunic wore splashes of blood, and addressed his men. Take him, the royal advisor. Eliminate him and they'll all give up. I'll deal with the witch.
He strode toward her.
Now, it was time. Quick, Stasia. She backed up, ducked into the shadows under the pines, and sent an urgent message to Flip, a mind picture of her comrades falling, and then of wolves. As the commander came closer, cursing as he tripped on a tree root, she opened her mind to the wolf leader. He and his pack were not far off. She had sensed them, circling, disturbed by the noise, the smell of blood, the possible threat to their safety. She made herself breathe. Getting this wrong would be disastrous. We need your help, right now. This man is a danger to the forest and all its creatures. My comrades and I seek only to reach a wise friend. Her image was of the old woman from the vision, beckoning, smiling. But these men would kill us all. Please help. I am a friend of the forest. Rihard was right on the other side of this tree. She could hear his breathing. And now, from out there, came a cry of pain in a voice she would know anywhere. Lucas. She couldn't wait. She couldn't let him die. Come now, please. One deep breath. Knife at the ready. The blade was stained red. There was blood on her hands. Blood spattered on her clothing. Wrong. So wrong. It made her want to scream. But Rihard was there, just waiting for her to move so he could grab her. The oak's deep roots hold fast to the earth. I, too, will be strong. She stepped out from cover and moved swift as a deer, darting past the commander and forward. One of the enemy had Lucas pinned against a tree trunk. The man had his forearm across Lucas's neck and was pressing hard. No time to think, except that she risked hurting both of them if she aimed wrong. She dived forward and slashed low with her knife, cutting into the assailant's inner thigh. He gasped, staggered, fell. Blood spurted. She had known where to strike. Lucas put his hand on her shoulder, not to comfort, but to keep himself upright. He was saying something, but it made little sense. Back. Can't. Stasia. Run. The gurgling, dying man at her feet had lost control of his bowels. She had done that. She had killed once, twice, maybe more. Lucas was wobbling, close to collapse. Just go, he croaked. Save yourself. The numbers were thinning. Carolus accounted for another man, apparently with his bare hands. Alex was under attack again, two against one, and Carolus moved in to support him. She caught a glimpse of Pavel. He and Mattis were fending off attackers together. And Rihard. Rihard was coming toward her again. He had taken his time, changed his mind, perhaps, about what he wanted. Stasia stepped in front of Lucas, shielding him with her knife at the ready and the body of his attacker at her feet. Now, please! The forest came alive with wolves. They streamed across the scene of battle, and with them flew a bird. It was a plain little thing, brown in colour, easy to overlook. But this bird darted about, always clear of the thrust of knives or the blow of staves, working with the creatures, showing them where to attack and where to hold back, guiding them between friend and enemy, even in the confusion and carnage. The commander's surviving men fell, screaming as sharp teeth bit into arm or leg or neck, writhing and bleeding on the carpet of pine needles, crying for their mothers. Stasia watched in horror. She had called the wolves in. She had known how it might be and how it might have been, had Flip not thought to direct the attack. The wolves had spared her friends. Still, it was hell. It was horror. It was unthinkable. But here it was before her eyes, and she should never use her gift this way again, because nobody should have so much power. Nobody. She dropped her knife and squeezed her eyes shut. I can't look. I can't see this. A howl of pain. A blow to her heart. Hard and final as death. Her eyes sprang open. The wolf leader was on the ground, writhing, screaming. A great cut had sliced open his belly. Over him stood the commander, long knife bloodied, grin triumphant, even as his men lay dead or dying all around him. The hurt was in every part of her body. Her heart, her gut, her limbs, her head. She had never felt such agony. It froze her where she stood. In that moment, Rihard moved, and she found herself pinned back against him with a knife at her throat. "Drop your weapons, or she dies right now!" One by one, they obeyed. Even Alex. Lucas's face was a mask of horror. Were none of the commander's men left alive? Not one? Oh, gods! The wolf! The wolf still lived, but its life was draining away with each moment that passed. And somewhere in the clearing, a man was dying. She dared not move her head to see who it was, lest the commander make good his threat. She dared not make so much as a gasp, but she felt that man's anguish, his regret, his confusion. "Let her go, Rihard." Alexis had found his senior advisor voice, though it was not quite steady. "What's your plan? To walk all the way home on your own?" "Shut your mouth, master, Alexis. She'll do what I want, or she'll die. And you'll go along with it, if you put any value on your own future. Look what you've done. See the carnage your ridiculous plan has caused? I lost 5 good men on that wretched Ridgeway, and I've lost more here, thanks to you and your foolish quest. What in the name of the gods did you imagine you were doing?" His grip tightened. Stasia felt the cold bite of the knife against her skin. Through tears, she saw a subtle glance between Alex and Carolus and knew what it meant. "Don't!" she breathed. Something flew across the open area with a wild screech. It came within inches of Stasia's face, making her blink. The commander started in shock. His fingers lost their hold of the knife, and his grip on Stasia slackened. She twisted, freeing herself, and delivered a swift kick to his groin. He grunted in pain, cursed, bent to retrieve the weapon. As he rose to stand, something whirred across the clearing and struck him on the temple, felling him. "Do with him what you will. Do what justice demands." A figure had appeared from under the trees, holding what appeared to be a slingshot, a warrior, a woman, but not a human woman, for there was a subtle difference about her features. She was tall, fair, clad all in green, and she wore vine leaves in her hair. Stasia and her companions stood mute as others came out to join her, both men and women, encircling them. Their beauty and composure suggested ancient times, ancient tales. Some were fair, some dark, some carried bows and quivers, some had shining knives at their belts, some carried woven baskets. The forest folk. Or if not the folk of the tales, exactly, then something very like them. For a few shocked moments, everyone stood still and silent. It was Lucas who moved first, stepping forward and bending to retrieve the knife the commander had dropped. He knelt by Rihard. The man's chest was moving. He still lived. And now, his lids fluttered and he opened his eyes to stare up at Lucas. Stasia's teeth were clenched. Her face was wet with tears. The pain still throbbed in her chest. "May you find forgiveness in the afterlife," Lucas said quietly, and with one steady stroke, he drew the blade across the commander's throat. He'd always been good with knives. Oh, gods, the pain was unbearable. It was calling her to action, for she too had a farewell to make. She would not beg for forgiveness. Too late. With that handsome creature lying on the forest floor with his belly cut open,
and the last light fading from his eyes. None of the other wolves was in sight, but she could feel their presence, feel their anguish. And closer at hand, there was a dog, a good dog who had just witnessed hell, a dog who had crept in now that things were quiet, a dog whose master was probably lying here among the dead. Perhaps she had killed that man. Alex had moved under the trees. He was crouched down beside a figure whose clothing was soaked in blood, whose struggle for breath could be heard even from here. A man with hair the colour of sunshine on ripe barley. Purveil. He was saying something to Alex, even as he gasped for air. Alex was supporting him, helping him into a half-sitting position. She knew he was speaking words of comfort and forgiveness. Stasia had her own work to do, and it must be now. She knelt by the fallen wolf, laid a gentle hand on his side, struggled to make herself calm through the pain. If she felt like this, how much worse must it be for this beautiful creature who had sacrificed himself today? She opened her mind fully to his, knew his regret, his sorrow to leave his mate, his pack, his life in the great forest. There was only one way to farewell him, only one thing to do. She sang a song she remembered from long ago, a lullaby grandmother had sung to her at bedtime, much of which was wordless. It was a song of the forest, the wind in the trees, the splashing of frogs in the pond, the footfalls of deer, the many calls of birds, the voices of wolves and of owls, the sun, the moon, the starry night. She sang, and under her hand the wolf calmed and his heartbeat slowed, and in her own heart the pain began to ease. She sang until he released his last breath. Around her the clearing was silent as the men sat watching, and the tall folk stood under the trees listening. "Sleep, my dear one," Stasia whispered. "Sleep, my brave one. Fly high, dive deep, dance with the wind, run fleet in the forest. You will never be forgotten. Sleep, sweet soul." She sat there a while after the wolf was gone. When she opened her eyes, it was to see Alex closing the eyes of Purveil, who lay limp in his arms. Carolus bowed his head. Mattis did the same. Lucas was standing beside the fallen commander, the knife in his hand. He dropped the weapon now and dashed away tears, leaving a bloody mark on his cheek. "Come," he said, clicking his fingers, and the tracking dog padded over to him and sat obediently at his feet, though it was shivering hard.
"Good boy."
Lucas crouched to stroke the dog's head, and when he got up to walk away, the dog walked by his side. 44. Alexis. Under the trees, all was still. A strange kind of peace had fallen over the place. The forest folk waited, not advancing, simply holding respectful silence and biding their time. Carolus eased the limp form of Purveil from Alex's arms to lay him on the ground, and Alex rose to his feet, facing the woman who had used the slingshot to such precise purpose. Never mind that his heart was breaking. It was time to be a leader. "Greetings to you. My name is Alexis, son of Felix. My father was senior advisor to the late Lord Casimir, ruler of the Northlands. I have held that position since my father's death, first with Lord Casimir, and then with the current ruler. Events have caused me to take a different path. I am not here as a representative of Lady Elisabetta. With me are my friends and comrades on this journey." Why was it so hard to hold on to his composure? He would not look at Stasia, whose song had made him weep. He would not look down at the young father who had lost his life because of others' evil scheming. He cleared his